with episode 537 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Greenville, and continuing my quest for Bronze Thumb. Maybe he and Gary are magically bonded together now, but all we see is Gary.
Hello, this is Bronze Thumb. This is Gary from Jacksonville, and now we are comfortably thousands of miles away from each other, as far as I know. And... Anyway, but I am looking forward to some of our discussions tonight, especially a certain woman wearing a skirt. And no, I'm not talking about Felicity.
That was your Bronze Thumb impression. I'm sorry.
It's much better when you're drinking. And I mean, you're drinking.
Yes.
I will take your word for it. However, this requires testing in Atlanta in roughly 6 months. Anyway, we are going to be talking about the top shows and bottom shows of the week as we go down this long list of, let's see... Just to get them, 21 episodes ran this week that we consider worthy of some degree of discussion, but we are going to focus on what came out on top and what sank to the bottom in this little mixture that we have here. But Edmund, before we go and strangle any more metaphors, please give us a disclaimer.
Absolutely. We will talk about just about anything and everything that might have happened in these episodes, so you will be definitely spoiled. But as always, we try and give you a week to catch up before we do that to you.
That's right. And with no further ado, we're going to go ahead and jump into our top three. And there are some surprising results this time around. Shows that rose to the top that normally would not, although our very top spot is a familiar face. But, well, we're not going to talk too much about number three because it's a show only I watch, but I believe that at least for me it had a certain resonance, and that would be The Vampire Diaries, and let's go ahead and run a promo.
I'm moving to a new town, having a new start. Slam the
door, you. I don't think that I'd be able to get through this. Sign me up.
Cheers, guys.
You deserve a normal life, Tara.
She's right. Time to get the hell out of here. I said goodbye,
man. All right, and that was The Vampire Diaries Season 6, Episode 14, Stay. Jeremy reminisces with Elena on his last day in Mystic Falls. Stefan and Caroline grow closer when they prepare Caroline's family cabin for her mother to live out her final days. Sheriff Forbes turns to Damon to help solve one of her remaining open cases involving Elena's parents. Enzo lures Matt and Sarah into a dangerous plan. I gave this episode an 8.5. It is by far the best episode of this show all season, and maybe for quite some time.
Was there something that stood out about it, John?
Yeah, there really was, and without getting too deep into personal situations, as some people who may know, I recently had a friend of mine who passed from cancer, and it was literally the day of the funeral that I watched this episode, and it turned out to be, well, number one, I should really read the recaps first before I watch the episodes, apparently, but, I mean, this really was an episode about facing one's fate. And we had a couple different examples of this. The main one being Sheriff Forbes, who's been there since the very first episode, who was diagnosed with cancer earlier in the season. They've tried everything to cure her. It really has done nothing, as one would expect. But this was the last episode of her appearing as a character, obviously. Basically, in this case, she's trying desperately to solve the... what she considers to be the mystery around Elena, the main characters, her parents' death, which of course was one of the things that was important to the pilot and kicked off the story in some very big ways. So this was really bringing it back to that early portion of the series. What was interesting, of course, is that she's trying, as this is like the last cold case from her perspective that she has on her desk, and there's a stack of cases that she has never been able to solve, and she puts it on the desk, and she is going to get through these cases. And so in that sense, it becomes a visual mark of every time she solves yet another case with Damon's help, it's one step closer. And she has that one final case, and she's trying to ascribe some kind of supernatural meaning to it all. And at the end of the day, it's simply an accident. It happened. And yes, Elena's parents died, and yes, it was tragedy for many people. However, it was just... the way it had to happen. There was no greater meaning behind it. And that was tied to her fate as well, basically, is one of the things they were driving home. Meanwhile, you have Caroline trying to just find a way to make her mother's final days as special as possible. So she's working on this cabin with Stefan, and she's, you know, going through boxes of books. Oh, what are the perfect last books for her to read? And, you know, she's trying to find this way to make her those last days so special. But in the process, she spends so much time doing that, that when the moment comes, she's not there to say goodbye to her mother. And there were just so many aspects of this episode that, of course, just because of the resonance that it had with recent events, really just stuck out to me. But at the same time, just as an episode, that it's been a while since this show has delivered something that had layers of meaning on this level. And I really just enjoyed it on that one. So it was somewhat cathartic in that regard, but it also, I feel, was by far one of the more lyrical episodes of the season, which normally these days, the originals, the spinoff, gets most of my accolades because it seems to be more fresh with its storytelling. This really kind of hit home, though. Again, I'm the only one who watches it, but that essentially is why I felt that it got an 8.5, and that was good enough for it to get up into the top three. But a show that Edmund and I both watch and have been singing the praises of all season, but has finally kind of stepped it up a little bit more to get up into that top tier, is The 100. So here is the promo for that.
What happened here will not stand.
The dead will be avenged!
After everything we've done, do we even deserve to survive?
I want the mountain men dead. All of them.
You think we can hold them off?
As long as we have to.
And Edmund, if you don't mind doing the recap, if the spreadsheet allows you to do so.
Yes, it seems to be cooperating tonight. But this is the 100, Season 2, Episode 13, Resurrection. Lexa's leadership decisions are questioned by Clark. Meanwhile, Abby struggles to help an injured Kane. And
boy, does that ever put it lightly.
Yeah.
Yeah, we both gave this one an 8.5, and I think that's the highest score you've given an episode of The 100 this season. I'm just going to very quickly take a look.
I think so.
But for you, what was the highlight of this one?
Well, it was kind of a couple of different things. I mean, it was real. This was the episode where it was the aftermath of the missile attack, and that whole decision of Clark and Lexus to let it happen. I mean, their version of the whole Coventry argument that they couldn't evacuate, because that would let the mountain people know, the Mount Weather people know that they had a spy tipping them off, and basically it was the show. I mean, continuing not to pull their punches, both in terms of the aftermath of what was happening at the camp, and the spotter who had then turned into the sniper who they have to hunt down on that end of things, but then also at Mount Weather, the remaining, whatever, the 48 of the 100 who are held prisoner there, and their insurrection, it turning just very violent and bloody, as it should, given the situation they were in, where they're basically being kept as lab rats who are going to be sacrificed to harvest their bone marrow. And if you're in that situation, you are going to defend yourself to the point of killing your attackers.
I wanted to interrupt just for here, because one of the things I really liked about that in terms of the justification is that it's not simply that that's what happened, but when the guy walked by one of the bodies of the fellow children who had been sacrificed by having the bone marrow out, and just the bloody chunks.
Mm-hmm.
Because, yeah, that's one of the things that has really stood out about the show, is that they don't cut corners. When they have something violent happen, it happens. It's very strange for the CW to go as far as they do. But anyway, please continue.
Yeah, no, and then, I mean, the other thing that I was really almost expecting, and not just as I was being a little tongue-in-cheek last week about thinking, oh, this is... This is why Paige Turco could show up in Person of Interest, because they're going to kill her off on the 100. But having Abby and Kane trapped under that rubble, where certainly it looked like Kane might be on his way out, and then the further collapse where Abby might be on her way out. And of course in the end they did both survive, which I'm certainly happy about, because I do really enjoy both actors. But it's also interesting how well they have done in building up this younger generation, Lexa and Clark, as the natural leaders, in a way that really feels natural and not tacked on. I mean, again, that sort of what is now the increasingly out of date cliche about the CW is all this teen drama, and you could see in that context people thinking like, oh sure, of course the teens are supposedly in the lead because that's the focus they want, but in this case, no, it is extremely well earned, and the two of them have stepped up and have become leaders, and even the Octavia arc with her stepping up and becoming the second of the grounder commander. It's also remarkable that how much of the focus of and the power struggles has been on the women on this show. This is something that started in the first season, and they've just ramped that up as well in the second season, where yes, there are these male characters who do play significant roles, but as far as the leadership goes, it's really the women who are stepping up.
Oh, absolutely. And that's one of the things I really like about the show as well, is that we have a variety of characters, but everything's earned. There is no such thing as them just kind of giving the time to the younger characters, like you said, just because they are, you know, on the CW. The premise is logical. And there was that one line that was in this episode, the one conversation, rather, that Kane had, where, you know, they're lamenting, like, how in the world could Clark justify this horrific decision to sacrifice people? And Kane sits there and says, we taught them that.
Yes.
We taught them, you know, and Kane, of course, is going to be the one that's going to say this more than anybody. He, you know, would have this really draconian way of looking at things, this very pragmatic, like overly pragmatic way of looking at it. And this is exactly the kind of thinking that he would have applauded. And so for him, you know, it's almost he can't say much about this because this is something he would have done. He has done it. So, yeah, it was a really nice way to tie back all the way to the beginning of the show. Because, again, it's like, oh, it's all about these teens. Well, it's about these teens because basically someone like Kane made the decision for everyone to survive, we've got to cast these guys off.
Yep.
It just so happens we all wound up where they are now, and they've stepped up to the plate. Why? Because they had to. And yeah, it's all about survival. I love the fact that now that they are fighting a common enemy, the grounders and the exiled are now pretty much together. Like you said, Octavia, her arc has been tremendously surprising, because not surprising in how it has turned out, but the fact that we saw it coming and it still works so well. It doesn't feel like pandering at all. It's well earned.
Yes.
So yeah, this show is definitely bringing it, and it did turn out to not be the highest rated or scored show. The mid-season finale, Spacewalker, was the
top
one. Yeah. Yes. But that also wound up in the top three. So that's it's indicative. When the show is hitting all cylinders, it's up there with the best.
Yeah. Yeah. And actually, just just one last thing on Octavia's storyline was also, I mean, that was the one element with her and Lincoln and that sort of whole Romeo and Juliet storyline that could have been incredibly cloying and tacked on, but that has been really well developed as well. And I don't think I got a chance to mention it a few episodes ago when they filled in some of Lincoln's background and why he was actually so open to accepting the 100 initially, which wasn't explained, you know, did seem a little odd given everything else we were seeing about the grounders, but they did do a good job of filling in that backstory and explaining why he might have a little more acceptance and curiosity. And it's just been some really good storytelling all the way down the line.
Yeah, this has been one of those surprises, and I'm glad that it has been renewed for its third season, because this is a show that needs to keep going.
Yes.
Another show that I can only hope gets renewed for another series somewhere down the line.
Somehow, somewhere.
yes, is our number one choice, and that is Agent Carter. Here's the promo.
ABC next Tuesday.
I'm not playing a game. I never was.
Peggy Carter's lost everyone's trust.
You want to pretend we're still friends?
You think you know me.
And there's only one way.
If you want the truth, I'm ready to give it to you.
To get it back.
You are wasting precious time. There is a trained killer out there. We have less than 90 minutes before something's going to happen.
New Marvel's Agent Carter. Next Tuesday at 9, 8 central on ABC.
And Gary, if you don't mind doing the recap this time.
Absolutely. It's a long one. Peggy is cornered. Meanwhile, the SSR close in on Howard Stark.
I'm really appreciative of your ability to get through that because it was such a chore.
It was a tongue twister.
It was, but this episode has gotten a lot of praise from the Critical Myth crew and the extended Critical Myth family. It came in at an average of 8.88. So there you go. The highest score, obviously, for the week. And Gary, I mean, you gave this a 9, so pretty close to the average. What were your highlights for this one? What was it what brought it up to a 9 for you?
Peggy's getting respect. You know, they're not happy with her, but, you know, she starts to get a little bit of it in the previous episode. But at this point, they're like, wait a minute, you've been running this operation behind all our expert backs? Yes. It's refreshing that she is now appear with these people. She's not a secretary. She's not someone to get coffee. She's not even someone who you'll assign minor tasks to, a junior staffer. They're starting to realize that she's as good, if not better, than they are. And it's that respect that I think we've all wanted from the beginning, from the first episode, that we felt that there was something amiss, that, oh, they're showing the history, but at the same time, we had felt that she had already earned it and yet lost it all over again. And it was in a not quite a hero way per se, but she's earned their respect back again as someone who is talented and capable of doing these sort of activities. And for me, that was the general high point of this show for me. I've been waiting for a while. What do you think? What aspects thrilled you about this show?
Oh, I think that that's one of them, certainly. I love the look on their face when she started running down all the ways in which she's been operating without their by your leave, and basically showing herself to be superior to them on every level. I like the fact that just all the pieces are starting to come together, and really they're looking to her to figure out what to do. I mean, it's a startling turn of events after the way that she was being treated at the beginning. And think, that was only 7 episodes ago. The character arc has been tremendous in this series. Edmund, what would you add to this? It's especially about how Peggy is now being treated by the SSR.
Oh, yeah. No. Well, certainly. I mean, this was the culmination of what I think was as annoyed as we might have been at the overly sexist overtones at the beginning. I think it was pretty clear that was all going to get turned on its head by the end. So it was great to see it finally come to pass. In addition to that, I mean, the way they've taken all those guys who just seemed like sexist boors and turned them into full-fledged characters again, and taking them from that stereotype to real people was a pretty remarkable achievement as well. And certainly with this, I mean, I'm the flip side was, you know, was of seeing Peggy come into her own was of course, you know, seeing Dooley's downfall. It was not something I really saw coming until I sort of thought about it later in terms of the yes, this is a miniseries, but him having to make that sacrifice and blow himself up at the end to and in that spectacular way which did manage to keep everybody else alive, but just seeing Evchenko slowly pull him into that web that they've been building over the last couple of episodes was both horrifying and exciting and heartbreaking in the end.
Yeah, now I'm not sure what exactly we're going to see in the finale, but Gary, what are your thoughts about this? Where do you see this going? Do you see more connections to the overall universe, or do you think they're going to keep it pretty self-contained?
I'm hoping they keep it self-contained because I feel they've thrown out enough. I felt they threw out enough connections just having the Howling Commandos in a few episodes ago, and I think appropriate number of references to Captain America. I'd like to see it sort of stand on its own. I think Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was making enough references to it to plug it during the first part of their season this year. And I don't need that type of plug. If it fits in well, like the Howling Commandos did, use it. But I really don't want them to link it necessarily in that fashion. So I'm hoping it does stand alone. And that keeps a little bit of story freedom, because as the dynamics of the current day Marvel Universe and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. change, if you link it too hard, then you break something and it's hard to bring it back.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, is Peggy Carter the kind of character that works better in small doses, I wonder? Because we know that she's going to be in Ant-Man this year. She was in some good scenes that were important to the second season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. so far. And then we have her miniseries here, which they've done so much with so little. Do you think that they're trying to be at least more conscious of oversaturating the character at this point? Or do you think that it's still a sign perhaps of their lack of commitment to female characters, maybe? Because we've seen also some arguments that why is it that Black Widow is the, you know, best supporting character of several films, yet they can't seem to figure out how to make a solo film for her. I'm kind of just throwing that out there, but what do you think, Gary? I mean, is it best to keep it the way that it is, just to not overplay the hand with this character, or does she deserve more?
Well, I don't think it's an if or. Yes, I think the character could easily be fleshed out a little bit more. And at the same time, no, I'd like to see her used in moderation. I don't think you have to throw her into every situation that Marvel lists for the next, you know, that happens to them to make the character viable. I like the idea that the Marvel Universe has corners and they do connect sometimes, but it's not like Times Square where everyone is constantly stepping on each other's toes. Every once in a while, they might bump into each other, but it's not something that happens regularly. So I'm fine with that. You know, there's a ton of early Marvel material that they could introduce into Peggy Carter and still sort of keep it somewhat isolated by itself. So, you know, I would like to see that. I'd like to, you know, we saw the Stark Expo mentioned, for example, in Iron Man 2. That's pretty close to the time we're talking. We're a few years away, so you know, maybe something like that could come up. You don't know, but there's still stuff out there that they can tie in without necessarily making it Avengers related or even S.H.I.E.L.D. related. So I'd like to have them explore her own little corner and not tie her in directly too much.
Yeah, I could see. I definitely want them to continue with the character, and I wouldn't mind the idea of them continuing to do more of these limited episodes, whether it's in miniseries like this, even like the one shots from the DVDs, although perhaps, you know, more fleshed out than that. But there is actually something that I kind of like about the idea of them doing more self-contained limited series, because it harks back to that era that she's coming from with the Saturday afternoon serials, and where, you know, now you go and watch an episode before the matinee feature, you know, for six or eight weeks running, which was certainly the model they were using for this. And just provided they do keep coming back to her, I wouldn't mind the idea of them doing it in a slightly different form than the conventional movies or TV series.
Now, of course, the other side of this is that the show hasn't exactly been getting great ratings. It's not significantly below Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but it's still not, you know, hitting gangbusters out there. I still maintain that everything that Disney is potentially doing with this whole subscription model thing and the bigger MCU is telling me that if they've got executives going out and basically saying they have no concerns at all about S.H.I.E.L.D. and Agent Carter's ratings, that ratings for those two shows are practically meaningless. really, they're. I can't imagine it's going to be a factor. But again, you know, I'm wondering if that's going to have some kind of effect on whether or not we see more. They may think that it's best to do this again next year as an interstitial hiatus product. And I think that might be perfect. But we'll see. We'll see. We're going to take our mid-show break and perhaps invoke some of that discussion that we were having regarding New York City before. It seems like Times Square is getting a lot of name-checking this week. So maybe we'll pick something that's a little appropriate to that context. So stay tuned.
Found me. I'm a $65 million circus tragedy. I'm not rolling, baby, rolling in the green, but I'm unique, a freak. I'm the new Coney Island, and all the rides are open and free.
So, yes, that was, of course, invoking the Spider-Man Broadway musical and a song that I think should be playing during Comic-Con at all times. But anyway, we are going to be now talking about the bottom shows of the week, the three shows that came in with the lowest score across the board. And as usual, we like the sprinkles in the Progressive commercial, we do not use promos for the shows that end up at the bottom. Promos are for winners, Jimmy. All right. We are going to then move on to a surprising entry at our number three slot here. And coming in at a general score of 6.75 for this show. But anyway, The Walking Dead. That's right. Season 5, Episode 10, them. Life on the Road has the group beaten and beleaguered. And like I said, below 7, so a below average episode in some respects. And it went, scores went anywhere from 6 to 7.5. And yeah, this was, I'm going to check to see if this was the lowest episode, scored episode of the season. But Gary, you were towards the low end, and what's your thoughts on that?
Oh, this was, geez, this was just sort of torturous. I really felt like this was some sort of filler episode because, I mean, I didn't feel like there was much progression. I didn't feel like the characters grew or learned anything. It was just, you know, as hard as it was for them walking that road without food or water, that's how hard it felt for me. I realized that they're in a sort of resetting phase, and the writers have talked about wanting to move the television show back in line with the books again, and we do see that starting to happen for those of us who have read or have read it. And so we know people had to go.
Yes.
And so that was expected, but at the same point, it was such a bad way to go. At least I felt it was. It was a cheap shot. It wasn't heroic. It wasn't even stupid. It was just sort of everyday life. And maybe that's the message they were trying to get across. But I was hoping for a little bit more, and I usually do out of this show. And this was one of the few times that it didn't give it to me. I just did not care for this episode at all. It seemed like a lot. They were just sitting around waiting for something to happen. Mm-hmm. Eventually it did, thankfully, you know, with the introduction of the new person from wherever he will be, and possibly from.
Dance around. Anyway.
But regardless, we did finally get someplace at the end, but gosh, it took us till the last 5 minutes of this episode to get there, and that to me is not a success.
Yeah, I think my way of putting it was that this was an episode that could have easily been covered in the montage in the teaser for the actual episode. In fact, I'm fairly sure it was the teaser for the previous episode. It did it more effectively. This was just a waste, in my opinion. And I even gave it at least a little above average because of a few things here and there. But yeah, how many times do we need to get beaten over the head that, yes, the dead are a representation, the walkers are a representation of, you know, death always over your shoulder in this situation, and, you know, any show of providence or blessing is, you know, some kind of expression of God in this universe, and oh, it was just so overbearing.
Now, was this the first time that we heard the quote that we are the walking dead?
I think so.
I believe so, yeah.
And that was probably one of the other things that annoyed me, is that that's such a big seminal moment in the original story. And the way it was woven into that speech was like he was practically just bored with the idea.
Yeah.
It didn't have the impact that I would have hoped for. That's true for the episode as a whole. How many times can we beat this same drum before we finally move on? That has been this entire season. It's all been about driving home this message. They're way past their prime. They're way past, you know, being able to do this on their own. Something needs to break. And yes, finally, something looks like it may be breaking. Are they going to have trust issues? Of course they are, because what have they been dealing with for the last half season? I'd have trust issues with my own reflection in a mirror at this point. It's ridiculous. So yeah, but man, we didn't need an entire episode of everyone is depressed. No kidding. I was actually thinking that they were going to go maybe in a different direction with one of the characters, one of the subplots that's in the comics. Gary, you probably know where I'm going with Maggie, for instance.
Yes.
And they didn't. And that was one of the things that annoyed me as well. It's like you're playing up maybe going there, and you don't go there. Instead, you just have everyone sulking.
Yes.
The sulking dead. There you go.
And it says they're 6 miles from D.C. and there's nothing around. Really?
60.
Okay. I thought I heard 6. Okay.
No.
That makes a little bit more sense for me.
Yeah, assuming that they're just kind of wandering down or up 95. That looks familiar enough. But yeah, so Edmund, I mean.
I can't really add much more. I mean, that was. Especially when we got to that end, and okay, as I
mentioned sometime last week. I've now decided that yes, I'll be the guy who hasn't read through the comic books, but even it was still obvious to me that oh this Aaron guy seems pretty significant, and why couldn't he have shown up about halfway through the episode so we could start dealing with this new twist and all the trust issues that are obviously going to happen, etc. Because I really didn't need this big long episode of yes, reminding me that they're in a bad situation.
Things Suck, Part 9. Yes. It's like, I don't know. I did like the visual at the end. It was about as blatant a metaphor as you get in terms of them holding back just one more night, death, mm-hmm. from stalking in. Now, my daughter watches the show with me now, and she was kind of like, well, wait a second. Why are they banging on the door? There's nothing that should have, like, nothing was driving them to the barn. Why are they knocking on the door? And yeah, I had no answer because there is no answer. Yeah, it was just really odd, to say the least. So yeah, I mean, we can all assume at this stage of the game that Aaron is fairly important. And I have every reason to believe that we are going to get into the next episode and we're going to feel like they could attack these two together really easily. But I don't know. This episode just felt so off. And Gary, you're right. I think you were going to say that, no, this is not the lowest that you've given this show this season. And this is not the lowest scored episode of the season. There's been two that have been just as low. Slabtown, which was the Beth-centric episode, got below this. And then Crossed, which was the lead-in to the mid-season finale, also was this low. The thing that all three of these episodes have in common is that the pacing was ridiculously slow.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of the problem. This season has been so decompressed, it's not even funny. I think it's that they know that they need to get to where they're going, but once they do, there's no turning back. So it's like they're lingering, trying to shove as much as they can into what's left of the period that they're in, and also using it to remove characters that aren't going to be relevant going forward because they're adhering more to where the comics are. But man, you don't, if you could get rid of Tyrese in one episode, you could have done that with Beth in one episode, not like five or six like they did. They yeah. rushed their way through the Hunters in Terminus, and then they hit the bricks. And that's been really holding back this season. I'm only lingering on this a little bit because this has been a complete wrong direction for the show, from what I can see. Because if we go back here, and I'm going to just bring it up, going even back to the first season, this is as low as the first two seasons. And this is the kind of decompression that was such a problem with viewers in the second season, if I recall.
Mm-hmm.
That it is just taking forever to get past the farm. And then they ramped things up when they got to the prison. They ramped things up when they got with Woodbury and the governor. And now they're back to hitting the brakes again. Not the direction that they need to go. I mean, it's still above average material overall, but it's a significant step back from the last two seasons. Would you agree, Gary, or do you feel like...
Yeah. Oh, no, you're hitting it spot on. It's, I don't know if falling back's the right word, but they're definitely not moving forward.
Okay. So next on the list, coming in at number two, is a show that unfortunately is very familiar in the bottom. And that would be Helix, Season 2, Episode 5, Oubliettes. And let's see if this will come up. Yes, Peter reveals his brother's secret and gets them both in trouble. At the same time, Kyle has his hands full trying to quarantine the orchard and the infected hive.
Yeah.
So this episode got a 5.5, which is identical to the previous episode. So maybe they've stopped the skidding. They're just kind of coming to a bottom now.
They are firmly stuck in the mire now.
Yeah. Okay. The thing about this episode was that there were moments where they really started to let that whole idea of the show being really not meant to be taken seriously. It started to make sense, like when the whole attack on the guy in the hazmat suit took place, and they started playing really atonal music.
Yeah, exactly. That combined with the Andy Griffith moment last week or the week before was they are really starting to tip their hand. Also when they are putting up the hashtag What the Helix, becoming a bit of a tip off too.
The other thing about this one that I thought was at least nice is that, hey, we got a name check on the stuff that happened at the end of last season's finale that they never were discussing. Oh, now we know what it means. Thanks.
Yeah.
No, really, thanks. I mean, it's nice that they finally told us what it was supposed to mean.
Yes. There is some connection, really, honest.
Yeah, and it's tenuous as it gets, but at least it's a connection. Kinda. So let's see. Is there anything else to say about this? I mean, it's all kind of still going on. There's I guess the revelation that the guy in the charge of the island, the Abbey, the guy from Wings, is apparently immortal now.
Yes.
And yes, Gary, thank you for that one. I now cannot stop thinking that this is the same character.
It is the same character, John.
Yes, yeah. And that makes the show so much better.
It is an improvement, yes.
Yes, it is, because now, I mean, it certainly falls into What the Helix entirely. But, okay, so even if you take the show on that level, I honestly feel like the scores are only as quote-unquote high or relatively high as they are because we've now chosen to accept this, that this is the televised version of a Saturday – as a sci-fi Saturday movie.
Yes.
Yes, it's still not good. it's not as bad as it could be because I could have easily brought this down if they were really, truly trying to be serious. But no – I'll give them that it's below average, but not maybe as dismal as it could be.
Yeah, well,
ringing endorsement from the Critical Myth Show.
Wow. It's still the case that regardless of how bizarre the scripts are and the production decisions, they do still have this quality cast who are doing their best to try and get through these scripts. But it's one of these cases of even if they're starting to tip their hand about being tongue in cheek, it's like, no, guys, if you're going to do that, you've got to go way further.
We
haven't reached the so bad it's good stage yet.
No, now it's just so bad. Yeah. And the thing that I'm waiting for here is I'm hoping, perhaps beyond hope, that the cast is in on all of this. maybe they weren't in the first season, but maybe now they at least are.
Yeah.
It's been really. Not good. This season has been disappointing in the fact that I was hoping that they would go a different direction and at least try and repair the problem. Instead, they're just doubling down on it.
Yeah.
You would think then that, series that have more inspiration might be able to take themselves out of a tailspin, but maybe not. And Edmund, unfortunately, you are the only one who watched the absolute lowest scored show this week. That's right. Helix has competition.
Oh, yeah. Big time.
Coming in at 5.
Thank you for taking the hit, by the way, sir.
Yes, Edmund, if you could please, very briefly, number one, introduce the show in the episode, and then just... Why is this not working for you?
Yeah, no, this
and
is...
While you do that, I'm going to step away and get some water, because, I need to hydrate after thinking about Helix.
Absolutely, of course. Yeah, you need to hydrate and keep your immune system strong after talking about that show.
That's right.
But we are talking about Allegiance, its second episode, Teamwork. Recap is Katya manipulates Alex and makes him think he's mistaken when he almost exposes his parents as spies, but her lies lead to a rift in the family. Meanwhile, Victor is warned to keep the O'Connors under control, and Alex teams up with an FBI agent. And unfortunately, it continued the mishmash of really over the top spy cliches. The Russians are just absolute heavies. They're setting up the classic, of course, there that the guy who is their direct handler is a little bit nicer. And of course, that's the one who the older sister is sleeping with. It's his bosses who are really coming in hard and heavy, and he has to try and protect the family from them. And then the infamous accusation that was coming at the end of the pilot, where Alex has figured out that they might have these spy connections, all got covered up by something that I saw coming like a barreling freight train about 10 seconds into the scene. Since I'm the one who gives the disclaimer warning, I can just go right ahead and say that yes, Hope Davis just winds up saying that, all that secretive stuff that you noticed when you were a kid, because of course you're this semi-autistic genius who remembers everything, wasn't me sneaking around as a spy. It was me having an affair on your father. Which of course then completely befuddles him, because we have to have lots of family drama to go with the spy drama, and this whole thing is just not working for me. it is silly beyond belief, and we're only two episodes in. And apparently I haven't vamped for long enough, so John is still hydrating. But I really don't want to talk about Allegiance anymore. Please, somebody get me out of this.
You've suffered enough.
But yeah, all I will say is certainly, despite starting with the same letter and having both Cyrillic characters and English characters in its title, the American certainly doesn't have to feel any danger of being trumped. Certainly quality wise, which we didn't expect in the first place, and I suspect rating wise either, as low as the Americans' ratings unfortunately are over on FX.
So basically, Allegiance is the anti-Americans.
Yes.
Okay, that works for me. All right, well, that is the top and the bottom shows of the week. And so, as usual, I think we're going to go ahead and let this be a little bit shorter. Next time, we are going to have the rundown of all the other shows that ran this week and our commentary from there.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google+, under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as fair use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the critical myth.